the OTB Podcast Network.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what do we get, a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the journalist David Snaid. Talking about the beautiful game up until 5 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit Dunluey.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the social channels for Periscope, on Twitter at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app. Download that now for iOS and Android by searching OTB Sports in your app store. Just to let you know, Owen Farrell has been red carded for an awful tackle, awful high tackle in Saracens' Premiership game against Wasps. So we'll have to see what type of ban he gets, but he must be a doubt now for that European Cup quarterfinal against Leinster in Dublin in 2 weeks' time. Owen Farrell, as red, a blatant red card as you would see, I'd have to say, was pretty shocking stuff. Let's take an update from the League of Ireland. Top of the table clash in the SSE Premier Division between Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians at Tallaght Stadium. Stephen Doyle.
Yeah, John, the second half just underway here at Tallaght Stadium. Still Shamrock Rovers 1, Bohemians 0. The goal coming in the fourth minute. Daniel Lafferty with his first goal for the Hoops. A bit of fortune, I suppose, for Shamrock Rovers. Graham Burke with a cross on the right side. Left-footed in-swinger. We're just seeing Burke here actually trying to generate an attack for Shamrock Rovers. Cleared away, though, by James Finnerty. But back to the goal. That cross from the left-hand side, or the right, I should say, snuck through all the players in the box. And it popped out the far side. It was saved by Stephen McGuinness in the Bohemians' goal. But he couldn't hold on to it. And it fell into the path of Lafferty, who has any good left wing-back should be coming in at the back post. And he was there to poke it home. To make it 1-0. Since then, John Reedy, Shamrock Rovers have controlled the game. Just looking at the possession stats there from the first half, it was about 65-35 in favour of Shamrock Rovers. But you have to say, all their possession, they didn't create a huge amount of chances. McGuinness didn't have to pull off too many saves in that first half. Bohemians really are trying to play Shamrock Rovers on a break, but you have to say, the home team defending really, really well. They play with that back three, the two wing backs, and every time Bohemians do try and attack, they really turn into a back five, and it's hard for Bohemians, who they really live off their wingers with regard to their attacking play. Chris Twardek and Danny Grant on the left and right respectively, and they just haven't had that space to run into, which they have against their previous teams in which they've got their wins since the restart. So it's just been hard for Bohemians to get anything in that final third going. And they really haven't been playing as well as they have over the last number of games. I'm just watching their manager, Keith Long, here in the technical area, getting a little bit frustrated with his team. But, as I said, Rovers really controlling possession, controlling the play, but not having a huge amount of chance in that final third. And Bohemian struggling to get going. We're watching Jack Byrne here on the attack for Shamrock Rovers, about 20 yards out. He plays the ball out left, and a shot here from Aaron Keith Green, but it's blocked away by Andy Lyons there for a throw-in. So, Rovers 1, Bohemians 0, and still a lot to play for here early in the second half, John.
Stephen Elliott, speaking to Stephen Doyle there about Rovers and Bows. This is important for Rovers. Bohemians have had a lot of momentum, and Rovers had a couple of draws in the league, and it's important to set down a marker and reassert themselves in this title race.
Yeah, I think so. I was actually watching the first half there on the League of Ireland watch before I came on, and I have to say, it was a great start for Shamrock Rovers getting the goal. It was really poor defending, though, by Bohemians. I don't think Bohemians were ready for Shamrock Rovers at the start of the game. They started off real high intensity. The cross should have been blocked, I think, in the first place, though, for the goal. Give Bourke all that room on his left foot. And the goalkeeper, Steve McGuinness, who I actually played with briefly at Trotter, the one who was there, a very good keeper. He could have done better with the cross. But since then, Bows have kind of come back into it a little bit. They've had a couple of half chances. Ball was pulled back. I think it was Lunny probably should have done better with a ball back, cut back from the right hand side. But no, it's a huge game, 2 points in it at the top of the table. The winner of this will have great confidence going into the rest of the season.
You talk about confidence there. Danny Lafferty scoring again today. Got a couple against Cork. That's what it's all about for a striker.
Yeah, definitely. He got himself in at the back post. He was a little bit lucky that the defender kicked the ball off him there today. But if you're in and around that six-yard box, you're always got a chance of scoring, especially when crosses are coming into the box. And he's, like you say there, he's getting his rewards.
We have a new era now, Stephen, with the Stephen Kenny era. It began on Thursday against Bulgaria, 1-1 draw. Tomorrow, it's Finland. So we've got a live commentary here on Off the Ball here on News Talk Live, an exclusive commentary with Nathan Murphy and Stewie Byrne. 5 o'clock kickoff. What did you make of the other night, Stephen? Positives, we'll obviously start with those. You know, we had a lot of possession, 60%. We had Aaron Connolly was lively. Callum O'Dowd was good in the first half. We scored. We didn't lose the game. Stephen Kenny was decisive in his team selection. Like, he didn't include Seamus Cullen, the captain, or James McLean or Shane Long from the outset. What were the positives that you took from it?
Like you mentioned there, I think especially the first half, I think the passing was very crisp. There was a lot of possession football. There was no kind of just hoofing the ball upfield, so to speak. There was a lot of kind of little triangles happening in the pitch. A lot of it in front of the Bulgarian defence right enough, but still the Irish team eased themselves into it. Another positive was Adam Mida making his debut, 19 years of age. I thought he'd done well, especially in the first half. He kind of held the ball up quite well, got himself into little positions. And I think after playing that game, he's going to grow with confidence for the next time when he plays his next international cap. He'll feel a little bit more at home in there. And like you mentioned, Connolly and Dowda, for me, they were the two standout players for me. I think Connolly especially looks a real live wire down that left-hand side. I think he can play anywhere across the forward line and still cause problems. We've seen him when he broke onto the scene last year at Brighton, and he's somebody that I'm really pleased to see him kind of straight in at the start, man, because I think he's going to be a big player for Ireland in the upcoming games.
We've had Stephen Kenny's press conference. Dan and David will update us on it in a few moments' time. The big news out of it, Stephen, is that David McGoldrick will not play tomorrow. He will not start. He's available to play against Finland and Dublin, but he won't start. I suppose what that says to me is that Stephen Kenny possibly looking for continuity, maybe a bit of match sharpness required for David McGoldrick, but another chance possibly for Adam Mida.
I don't know whether Stephen Kenny though might be thinking he wants to see somebody else in that role, obviously, because if David McGoldrick isn't fit for the playoff game, then he'll want to make sure he's covered all areas. And I think Adam done okay. Second half, he maybe drifted out of the game a little bit in the second half the other night. But again, if he's given the nod, then I'm sure he'll have a lot of confidence going into the game. But you've obviously got Shane Long there, who came on in the game, and he done well for Southampton there towards the back end of last season. Listen, we know Shane isn't a prolific goal scorer, but what he does do is he causes problems for defences. He stretches defences with his speed and his game knowledge now. He's at that age now where he knows the game inside out, especially international football. He's been there, done that. And I wouldn't be, if David McGoldrick isn't starting, then it wouldn't surprise me to see him kind of look to Shane Long to spearhead the attack.
Is Adam Mida too green for Slovakia? I mean, that's the big game. Is he a bit too inexperienced at the moment for that type of match, do you think, Stephen?
I think he is, yeah. I don't think he's not played loads of first-team football. I know he's playing in little bits and pieces at Norwich, and he's done okay at the times. But I think in a big international playoff game with so much at stake, I think if David McGoldrick is playing, I think he's got to play. He was a player of the year last year. I think he'd done immense under the McCarthy reign, and he's somebody that has embraced the Premier League well. He's got off the mark as well towards the end of last season. And for me, I think he's a big player for Ireland, and I hope he's fit for the Slovakian game because I'm a big fan and I think he offers a lot to the team.
You know yourself from working under new managers, it takes a bit of time to bed in. Like Zoom calls, I know we're on a remote call ourselves with social distancing on Skype there, Stephen, today, and on the radio here in News Talk. But look, Stephen Kenny hasn't had much time to work with the players, and I'm sure that has to be factored into everything that happened on Thursday night as well.
Oh, definitely. Listen, since Stephen Kenny, everybody is aware of how well he's done with Dundalk, and then obviously again with the 21. So he's somebody that we need to give him a bit of time. We can't expect things to kind of flip and turn into this big passing team overnight, but there was positives the other night, and Stephen will be well aware of what went well and what didn't go so well, because he's a knowledgeable man and he understands the game. And it's a work in progress. Obviously, these games, I know the Nation Leagues, there's the reward if you finish in the high places, you get the playoff games and there's a chance of qualifying through them. But there's still, it's a good kind of tournament to look at players, and I think it's good that he's had these couple of games, I think, before the Slovakia game to get a look at his squad and get a look at players that can they play in the way he wants to play. in this different way to what way Mick played and Martin before Mick. So now it's, I don't know, I think Stephen Kenny would be happy enough the other night. I think second half, I don't think we were as good in the game, but there was enough positives to take from that to walk on that going forward. And obviously Shane Duffy popping up in the end like he's done so often and getting the equaliser, kind of, I think it was a little bit lucky to get the goal the way it did come, but that's what you've got with Shane Duffy. I don't think he had the greatest of games himself the other night, but you know, any good ball, any good delivery into the box, and he's a huge threat. And I don't think anybody in international football would enjoy marking him and corners and free kicks. And obviously Robbie Brady, who put the ball in, man, he's another player that I would love to see get a run of games and fitness, because I think he could be the kind of the catalyst to spark that kind of expansive football that Stephen wants to play.
So what do we need to work on from the other night in your view, Stephen?
I just think, looking at second half, I think the midfield looked a little bit out of sorts at times. I think they were a little bit unsure where they wanted to be. I think James McCarthy, I know he's been out, he's been off the scene a long time. I think he kind of drifted through the game a little bit like Conor Horan and Jeff Hendrick. I'm looking at the midfield positions, and if he's going to go with three in there, I'm still wondering who's he's kind of the best personnel to play in there. Obviously, there was big talk of Jay Malumbi coming in, and I thought we may have seen him at some stage. You know, obviously, under 21's captain being brought into the senior fold, and obviously, Stephen would be very aware of what positives he brings to the team. But I'd like to see him get a run in the team on Sunday, just to see whether he kind of fits in and kind of gets us playing. Because I think at times as well, even defensively in midfield, we were a little bit open and we didn't protect our back line as well as we had done in previous games.
Dan McDonald and David Snaid are with us now. Good afternoon, lads. And Dan, you were at the press conference.
I was, yeah. And no, I was just arrived back in, so I heard the early part of your chat with Sleeves there. Yeah, I mean, you were talking briefly about Shane Duffy and just the general tone of the press conference today. I think you might have been talking about James McCarthy there. In terms of news from the press conference, there wasn't necessarily a huge amount beyond the fact that David McGoldrick won't start, as you've mentioned earlier, because he's not 100% fit. So he's someone who I think you might see him play, but basically not taking any risks. He missed the first game with a foot injury. But I think that we're going to see a fair degree of continuity. He was Stephen Kenny was very positive about James McCarthy again, sort of. He likes him as a player. They have a sort of a thing going back a long time to when Stephen Kenny was in Scotland and James McCarthy was a rising star at Hamilton and had the world at his feet. And I mean, he still played in the Premier League for a long time. He still had a very, very good career by the standards of any mere mortal, but possibly not the career that people thought he might. I think even the career that Stephen Kenny thought that he might actually have. And he's still very clear that he's a big fan of what McCarthy offers and was making the point that it's probably harsh to judge him on the other night because he was coming off a pre-season and had a bit of an injury issue. But it does seem like when he is 100% fit that he's going to play. Now, the one thing he did caution by saying that you have to manage James, his situation. So he hinted that he might freshen up in a couple of areas tomorrow. I think, you know, if there was any more than two changes, I'd be surprised personally. And maybe he's one of those that could be vulnerable. But I even touched on this in a piece in the paper today that it's actually, he doesn't necessarily have an obvious like for like for McCarthy, like completely in terms of what he wants him to do. That maybe a lot of the other players that could replace him there, like maybe a Harry Arthur, or people talk about Jason Malumbi, but they're maybe more suited to like a two, like a 4-2-3-1 or something like that, whereas he seems to think that McCarthy is the one for playing that way. And as a result, like, I think he'd love to play him tomorrow, and maybe he still might, and he only plays a half or 60 minutes or something. But what's very clear is that his belief in McCarthy hasn't been shaken in any way, whereas obviously I know that some other people, including John Giles in this station, would have been very critical of him.
David, do you think it's McCarthy's best position where he will be playing under Stephen Kenny in this 4-3-3?
Well, I think it's his best position because it's the position where he's played throughout his career. And he's kind of, I know obviously John Giles made the point as well about the fact that he has to get on the ball. And like Stephen Kenny today was talking about that he's an exceptional passer, but like, we haven't really seen it. I think when you look at James McCarthy, he performs better in a role when he's kind of getting around the pitch, he's being energetic and he's like breaking things up, and then he just gets it and gives it to someone else. But I think if you're kind of relying on him to be the one that has to start the attack and get the ball and actually get a team going, I don't think he's capable of it. He's capable of other things, but if there was someone beside him who actually had those capabilities to make those passes to get a team going, give it into someone who can get on the half turn and get it wide and just do things quickly, I just don't think that's, even though he might have a good range of passing, I just don't think he has it in him to actually be that person to get on the ball and to get a team going. So, like, he's going to need to be there because you need to have someone who can offer you that protection. Like, he was the nearest man to the lad who played the pass for the goal, the Bulgarian, during the night, but he just wasn't able to get, kind of have that little burst to even get a bit closer to him. So, It was one of the points Stephen Kenny made even today about Finland as well, how like they can get at you, but they can kind of create those openings as well by hitting you. So it's going to be a lot of, not stress, but it's going to be a lot of pressure on whoever is in that position. I think McCarthy will stick with it. I don't think he will drop him. I think he will play again, and because it was one of the big things that came out of just being out there today was he was certain that the system wasn't going to change, that he'd freshen up people, but he wasn't going to be freshening up, changing around the system. It wasn't if he said, no, this doesn't work. I think McCarthy will play, and somehow, hopefully, Kenny can get more out of him, get him on the ball more and just bring it out of him. But you're sort of thinking at this stage of his career, is he going to be able to do it? Because this is the sort of team we've been talking about, James McCarthy, for the last number of years.
Just let's hear from John Giles speaking to Nathan Murphy the other night about James McCarthy.
Stephen Kenny has talked him up again and again over the past few weeks as saying he should be the best Irish midfielder of his generation if it wasn't for the injuries. He's back tonight. He plays in the heart of that midfield.
Yeah.
Has he the ability by himself to change the way that Ireland approach a game like this?
I would doubt it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he goes out there and plays great tonight. But when he was fit and at his best, Nathan, he didn't do that. He didn't get on the ball and direct the Irish team at all. You know, and then he had a bad injury, but this is his first match back from Dublin.
Yeah.
And now I'm going, how I remember him was that he was okay. He was got the ball from A to B, but he didn't dominate the game in a way that, if that's the way Stephen wants him to do, unless he's changed totally, or improved a lot since he's had the injury, Nathan. And I hope he has. But I haven't seen that in him when he played, when he was supposedly at his peak. He was just okay, you know?
You'd often wonder, watching him, like, is it a personality thing or a talent thing? Because it does seem as though he has all the talent there, but that his just nature is that he's not one of those commanding presences in midfield, who's going to be a real leader in the middle of midfield, that he seems quite happy to just keep things ticking over, whereas maybe Ireland needs somebody a little bit stronger.
Well, you always need somebody a little bit stronger, but there's a difference between ability, Nathan, and playing with ability. You know, there's lots of players who have ability, but they don't have, and I go back to positional sense, to get on the ball in the field, to use their ability.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like you see some of the, look, if you see some of the great players over the years. I mean, Pirlo, when he played for Italy, for example, like he could dictate the game and use the abilities had. If you put them against opposition, McCarthy and Pirlo, for an exercise of passing the ball here and passing it without anybody on the pitch, McCarthy might be as well able to do it as Pirlo. But when you put him on a pitch and somebody's stopping you from playing, then it's a different game altogether. So having raw ability is fine. It is fine. But you have to have the ability to get the position to use that particular ability. And I didn't see McCarthy doing that. I never saw him impose himself on the game with the ability that a lot of people said he had. It's like you have to show the ability. I've seen lots of players, Nathan, that they wouldn't have had half the ability maybe of McCarthy, but impose themselves more on the game and on the pitch. That's where it matters.
5-3-1-0-6. Hi, lads. The reality is we were poor against Bulgaria, who are themselves a poor side. Why don't we play to the strengths of the players we have? We don't have the players who can play a slick passing game. We need to face up to that. That is from Sean on 5-3-1-0-6. If it's not James McCarthy, lads, who else is it?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, that's the point. If he's sticking with that system, then he doesn't necessarily have, like, someone, you know, you could have Harry Arthur, right? But Harry Arthur is probably covers a lot more ground and snaps away. But the question mark with him occasionally in that sort of role has maybe been discipline, you know. And Jason Malumbi again, like with the 21s, it's Connor Coventry who actually has played in there. And Stephen Kenny has spoken about Jason Malumbi, that he likes his like chaotic streak. He likes his energy almost as one of those two breaking players, you know. So this is the thing, you know, like sometimes McCarthy is like, he's definitely like, I suppose the definition of exceptional passer. I think, you know, he can be very efficient and safe. He's not necessarily sort of flamboyant in any way and probably not really creative, but he's tidy, and I suppose he's part of a building block sort of thing. And, you know, and Jeff Hendrick was speaking the other day, is effectively, you know, it was almost as though McCarthy's role was nearly to be supplying Hendrick and Harahan. It didn't necessarily always happen. But I mean, that whole text there about playing to the strengths and all this, I mean, we just like, you know, I mean, like, I just can't, like, this is the battle that you face, you know. But unfortunately, playing to our strengths over the last couple of years, I think we've managed to beat Gibraltar home and away and Georgia at home. Maybe, you know, repeatedly. And it hasn't necessarily been delivering exceptional results. It will take time. The one thing I would say about Thursday as well, and I think it's a really important point, is that Bulgaria weren't your typical home team in a friendly. They were actually quite happy to sit off for spells of the game, and they weren't actually trying to necessarily dominate the ball themselves. And Stephen Kenny like picked the front three with loads of pace, but actually didn't really get a chance to show that pace because Bulgaria were actually, you know, they were sort of a bit deeper, and as a result, they couldn't actually showcase some of the strengths of Connolly and O'Dowda getting in behind. And there was that one moment at the start of the second half where Ida picked it up, and then Connolly made that darting run. And what you had then is you had a lot of sort of, you had possession, but it wasn't great possession. But Bulgaria weren't necessarily like killing themselves to win the ball back either. And perhaps, you know, Stephen Kenny is looking at a team and a system that's preparing you for a game against an opponent that will actually come out and try and play against you a bit more, so that when Ireland plays Slovakia next month, it's possible that, you know, you watch a bit of Slovakia. I mean, they've even dominated possession against Wales. They were poor last night against the Czech Republic, but they were missing loads of bodies. But that Slovakia, that you might actually have a situation where then McCarthy's ability to break the ball up like is more effective, in the sense that then you're trying to play it quickly and then you use the space and the break, and that maybe Bulgaria just wasn't the ideal opponent to test this out. I think that's just something to bear in mind, that this was like, you know, Bulgaria just aren't great. And as a result, strangely, even with Stephen Kenny's under 21 team, like the worst result they had was losing away to Iceland. Again, a team that wasn't madly interested in having loads of possession. And I think that's just something to bear in mind, you know, that the style of the game the other night may not necessarily have allowed the team as it was selected to fully show its full arsenal.
Yeah, it's not Bulgaria 1994, lads. Go on.
John, what I would say is, even with the text there, is talking about, again, playing to the strengths, like, it's not as if Ireland's strengths over the last few years have like been like brilliant. It's not as if Stephen Kenny is coming in and is ripping up a master plan that has worked and has been, worked wonders for Irish football over the last number of years. Like, I'd wonder how someone could look at what Ireland's supposed strengths are and think, yeah, like that's been working over the last number of years. Like, what has to happen now is for an Ireland team to actually give opposing teams something to worry about, something to think about in an attacking sense in a different way, because the way Ireland have played it over the last number of years is the easiest thing in the world for international class players to defend against. So, like, this is the start of something, you know what I mean? Not like, yeah, the possession against Bulgaria, it's great to see an Irish team even just pass the ball, even if maybe it wasn't incisive enough, it wasn't quick enough or sharp enough, but even just to see them a little bit comfortable and in control and have a sense of calm in the game, because that just hasn't been there. Like, there's still going to be those moments, as we've seen with the equaliser. It's no bad thing for an Ireland team to be able to do both, to mix and match. Before, it hasn't been that case. Playing to the strengths has actually been a major weakness. You're seeing little moments here and there of good results and the qualifying for tournaments when they've been expanded, but you can't stick in that rut that we've been stuck in. And texts are coming in there saying, oh, again, we haven't got the players. Like, this mentality has to change, because there's not one international player who is in that team who isn't capable of seeing a pass, picking a pass, and or shouldn't be capable, and making themselves available. Like, it has to be a change from this thing to thinking of playing to supposed strengths when they just blatantly haven't been there.
Yeah, Ireland scored 7 goals in their qualifying campaign last year. 3 of them were against Gibraltar, you know. So, and, you know, and there was, like, Stephen Kenny's team will still be good at dead balls. That will still happen, you know. So,
like, you're the nice Robbie Brady, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Shane Duffy's goal against Denmark. You know, those things will still happen, because, you know, again, there's a misinterpretation sometimes what Stephen Kenny is trying to do. Like, he still is going to be very... you know, he relishes scoring from dead ball situations, but, you know, if you have more of the play and you're more dominant, you might win more free kicks and more corners to do that, you know. So this is a key point.
No, just saying, I just think, I listened to the lads speaking there, I still think, though, our central midfielders, like, if we're going to play this expansive game, which, listen, I'm all for it, I want to see Ireland change, I want to see Ireland, everybody wants to see Ireland play football, because, like it's been mentioned there, we have players playing in the Premier League. But ultimately, when they've been playing for Ireland in this over the last few years, I've not seen some of these attacking players dictate games. I was listening to John Giles there speaking about players grabbing hold of the game, wanting the ball. I think we need to see more of our midfield players that manning that, having that confidence to get on the ball and make these things happen. And I think that's partly why the Stephen Kenny reign, I'm excited by it, because everybody talks about Stephen giving confidence to players to go out there and express themselves the way they want to. And I think this is why it will be a bit of a... it won't be a quick kind of transition into bang, now we're playing all of a sudden. There was glimpses of it the other night when there was a few little kind of triangles, even in the full back positions, passing out, linking up into midfield. Although we didn't get really far up the pitch, it was promising. But I'm hoping as his tenure goes on, these players, the likes of Conor Hora and Jeff Henrick, if he plays, these get the confidence that we know they can play. We've seen it do it before. But for me, they've been lacking that something playing for Ireland recently. And that's why I mentioned Robbie Brady. I think if he can stay fit, he'd be ideal to play in the Stephen Kenny team, because I think out of all the lads we've mentioned there, I think ability-wise, I know he's no spring chicken, but he's still young enough to go and kind of make a big impact. I think if he can get a run of games fitness-wise, I think he can really buy into the way Stephen wants to play, and I think he could be a huge player. It's just about getting him on the pitch regularly and getting him. We need these players to buy into the philosophy of Stephen Kenny as well, because some of these lads have been around the international team in the squad for a while, and it's very difficult just to kind of flick a switch and get in there and start playing a different way. Even Jeff Henrick, he comes in, he plays centre midfield for Ireland, he plays right wing for his club team, Burnley most of the time. He played at Newcastle last week in a pre-season friendly, half a game on the right wing, so they're coming in and playing in kind of different positions as well, so they need, it all takes time. But again, that's why I wanted to see Malone, because he would have played under Stephen Kenny in the 21s, in the system, in the way Stephen wants to play. And he had a solid season last year out on loan, so it wouldn't be like, it's not like Adam Idawa, he's not played lots of football. He had a full season of first team football under his belt, so I would have liked to see him a little bit, just to see how he coped in the game, because I know obviously it's a nation league, but there wasn't major pressure on the game. It's away to Bulgaria. Bulgarian are a great team, no supporters at the ground. I think it was a perfect opportunity to maybe have a look at some of this young talent that we all keep talking about and see doing so well in the 21. So I don't know, I'm interested to see what the starting lineup will be come the Finland game, because I would like to see a few changes rather than just, because I think it can be improved on the night. I thought the second half was a little bit poor, to be honest. First half there was positives there. I was like, yeah, this, and then the second half it just kind of seemed to drop a little bit, the quality, and we kind of, again, the goal, people say we didn't get any, over the years, we haven't had any success out of long ball, but most of our goals have come from Shane Duffy heading balls in, and that's something that we can't just walk away from, that, because that's a huge threat to have something like that in the locker as well.
Hi lads, I thought Jeff Hendrick played well, worked really hard all over the pitch, but I wonder, does that work against him at times in the green jersey? I prefer if he just sit in midfield to receive and distribute the ball instead of chasing all the time. The lack of a commanding midfielder has seen been our Achilles heel over the last decade or so. Remember Roy Keane, remember him? I can't see us moving forward until we sort out midfield. I know it's easier said than done, but I hope Kenny can sort it out. That is from Mike. The narrative that we don't have the players does not wash anymore. We had 9 Premier League players starting the other night. the exceptions being Duffy and O'Dowda. We had Premier League players on the bench. Premier League players can play passing football. It is a ridiculously competitive league. That is from Sinead in Cork. Got to take a break here. Back in a moment with Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonald and David Sinead on the Republic of Ireland. What did you make of the other night? What you want to see tomorrow in terms of players coming into the team? Simple as this for me. 60% possession. If you don't pass the ball in football, if you don't hold on to the ball, you don't win in the long run. We don't want Pyrrhic victories. We don't want to get to tournaments playing 1-0 set-piece football. We want to have expansive, regressive football going forward. And that's what Stephen Kenny is trying to do. And I hope it succeeds for him. Back after this. Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball on Twitter. We're joined for football until 5 by Stephen Elliott, the former Republic of Ireland striker, Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent, and the journalist David Sneyd. So we've already heard in this hour, Dan, that Dave McGoldrick's not playing tomorrow. James McCarthy, Stephen Kenny keeping the faith with him. Anything else we could glean from the press conference?
Probably not a huge amount in that regard. I mean, I asked him about Seamus Coleman and his exclusion, and you know, was it a difficult conversation? I didn't necessarily go into that in great detail when I asked him, but you know, spoke about how it was a marginal call to go with Doherty. And I suppose what's clear probably from his language that he's not necessarily talking about any scenario where he's going to try and use both of them. I think you know, his language consistently about this subject has been, well, he's blessed with all these right backs, but there's no suggestion that he's seeing them as anything other than right backs. Like, in all the debates about Stephen Kenny's team, like, the answers have been there if you look hard enough, probably. You know, like, there's been strong hints all the way through, all the way back to when he listed his squad, and it was very clear that he'd listed defenders, midfielders and forwards, and James McLean and Callum O'Dowda were listed as forwards, and it was always going to be you know, the old counter, like, four from the top, three from the middle, and three from the middle, you know. Three
strike
from
it lucky, is it?
Like, well, I don't know what it was. Is that not the countdown numbers or something? But anyway, either way, it was always going to be four from the top contingent of defenders, three from the midfielders, that's their six.
Bruce Forsyth, that's it, Bruce Forsyth.
And three from the... See, I don't know, John, you're way more on top of your sort of BBC 80s quiz shows than I am. But, like, the point is that people were putting, like, were speculating on teams that had, like, someone from the eight forwards, like, back in the midfielders, or that he might somehow put one of the defenders in his front three, as in Matt Doherty. That was never happening, you know, and it was clear that it was never going to happen. But I think that it wasn't necessarily something that was touched on today, but Sleeve spoke about before the break, that I think the most interesting player, in some respects, might be Robbie Brady, because he is possibly one that can, you know, can straddle a couple of positions in his mind, I think. And like, this is the one slight issue that Ireland possibly have at the moment, is that they do want to play in a particular style of play, but they don't have, like, that outstanding creative, say, what we'd call a number 10, really. You have, like, say, someone like David McGoldrick, who's more of a central striker, but he can drop back and play there. Then you look at the other options around, say, the panel. Like, I'm watching Jack Byrne here at the moment. Like, Jack Byrne has the attributes, but probably hasn't really been playing at his best level, I don't think, really, since the restart. So I can see why, I think he's had a bit of a back issue. I can see why he didn't make the squad. Conor Ronan in the 21s has fulfilled that role very well. Again, he's gone on loan to the Swiss second division. It's another Wolves, Jorge Mendes type thing going on there. Again, it's a leap for him from the level he's playing probably at too. So within the group, I think Stephen Kenny does think it's probably Robbie Brady that can be his creative central midfielder, albeit one that plays wide for his club a lot as a backup wide option to McNeil at Burnley. But I think it's been very clear that throughout, like, the last 6 months, that every time Kenny has spoken about Robbie Brady, he's raved about him. He turned to him early on Thursday. And I think if Robbie Brady's club situation is going better, if he's playing more games, I think he'll play a lot of games for Ireland under Stephen Kenny. And he's one that is going to be told, go and play. You've got the responsibility. Go and do it. And he's going to be massive.
Do you not think, Dan, just under Robbie Brady, even Jeff Hendrick to an extent, it's like them two lads over the past few seasons, I know they've had injuries, especially Robbie Brady, but they kind of play in different positions for Ireland as well and for the club team. And it's like you'd love to watch them one time and just grab a game by the scruff of the neck in a position in that central midfield position to say, do you know what, this is where I'm going to play, and make the manager's mind up both at club and international level. Because I, especially with Robbie Brown, I think he has the capabilities to do that. Like, we're talking about a guy who was at Man United for five, six years before he moved on. And I think if a few little things had been different, we could have seen him playing for Man United for years, because I think he's actually got that much ability. And I would just love to see him get that run of games where you just look at him and go, do you know what, there's where we're going to play him. There's the catalyst to get this expansive football off the ground under Stephen Kenny that gives every other player around him in the squad a lift. And because like you mentioned, you've got your Jack Bourne there. I've actually got the game on myself here. I'm watching. And yeah, he's a good player. He's technically got all the attributes. But I know people will say he's still playing at a level that I don't think is strong enough to be kind of considered permanently to be playing in these big high-profile international games. And I don't think Jack kind of moves away from Rovers and maybe tests himself at a higher level. I don't think he's ever going to be considered in that role. But for me, Robbie Brady could be the man. He really could.
Did we lack a bit of leadership, lads, without Coleman in the team the other night?
Leadership?
I
don't know. Like, I've heard that point raised, you know, like again, sometimes like there can be death by analysis in the sense of, well, Ireland conceded a goal. Might Seamus Coleman have said something to stop something from happening or whatever? It's like, I don't know. Like, yeah, there's like the Seamus Coleman debate to me is more that, yeah, he is a more recognised right back than Matt Doherty, ultimately. You know, like Matt Doherty has made his name in the Premier League as a wing back, and that Coleman will probably give you more defensively. But I don't know if I looked at the game the other night and thought that there was a leadership void personally. Now, you know, it's possible that, you know, Doherty's not as vocal a character. He's more of a, definitely more of a laid back figure generally. And I can see, you know, when you're thinking about Slovakia and the type of game it's going to be, you know, why you might think of, you have your captain there. And I can accept that line of thought, you know, although again, like, you know, we don't have these full heaving stadiums where people are losing their heads and their mind, and you need someone there for that sense of calm. And I don't know, does that negate some of that?
Do you not think, though, the other night, Dan, though, even though on the Doherty one, like, obviously Doherty, he gave Doherty the nod in the back four. Like, Matt Doherty hasn't played in the back four in a long, long time or at the top level. And I'm thinking, if you look at the back four the night, if you've got Enda Stevens there, Egan, obviously Duffy and Doherty, three of them are playing regularly in a back five for the club. And I know people say, oh, a wing back isn't that different to playing full back. But I think it is. I think it's two total different jobs. And I think if you're going to go with a back four, then I don't know whether I'd stick with Coleman ahead of Doherty in the back four, because he plays in that position. Like you say, he's a captain, he's a leader. And I think that is a good point. I do think we lack that little bit of leadership maybe in the squad. And I think Coleman, obviously, from knowing what I've known, speaking to some of the lads in the squad, I think he is quite vocal in and around the group. And he leads not only by example, but vocally as well. And I think if we're going to go with a back four, I think Stephen Kenny may have a little think about maybe changing that right side, because I think even during the game at times, both our fullbacks were quite high up the pitch and it left us quite open down the sides, which is something that you don't really want happening, because as well as Shane Duffy and John Egan are doing, they're not both blessed with loads of pace. So if our fullbacks are caught up high and we have that lack of protection maybe in midfield, then we might get done down the sides against the so-called better nations, because again, there's going to be better teams than Bulgaria that we come up against, and we need to be prepared for them challenges, as well as inflicting our own game on them the way Stephen wants to play.
I think what we're going to find as well too is that people, like, you know, teams like Slovakia will have studied Ireland for a period of time and watched them play in a particular way, and they're going to have watched, like, you know, the game the other night and presumably how they play against Finland tomorrow. You're going to see teams might change their approach against Ireland a bit. You know, they're going to target certain areas. You know, they might let Shane Duffy have the ball sometimes, and these things are going to happen, and you're going to have to react to that. And John, you actually asked me about, you know, was there any hints? The one thing that Stephen Kenny did say is that he doesn't like to change his back four, but he still might need an injection of energy. And I don't know, could you take that as a hint that it's possible Seamus Coleman might come in? Like, it was not dismissed out of hand, and it's possible he might go game to game. I take Steve's point on board completely about the, you know, where they play for the club. The one thing is, and Kenny spoke about this last week, it does appear that Matt Doherty will probably be playing in a back four now with Spurs. And Kenny spoke about how actually by watching Spurs that the fullbacks, there's a different balance completely, that like Serge Aurier last year would be so high up the pitch, and maybe that's where Mourinho sees him, as a right full, but in a different way of doing things.
Yeah.
And it's possible that Kenny might want to do something like that. He was speaking about not necessarily, the balance of the fullbacks is not always an old-fashioned way, although the one thing is Stevens is quite attacking as well too, so it's not like there's a sort of a defensive left full and one sort of can take more chances the other side. But I think it's all part of the balance that I assume, the logic is that, that Conor Hourihan is sort of covering for Stevens and Hendrick for Doherty, but it's possible that you might see Coleman there all right, and it's a game-to-game thing, depending on the situation. And I suppose maybe he thought you'll have more of the ball against Bulgaria, but maybe if there's a game where a team is possibly going to be a bit better in possession, I wonder would he change it with Coleman. It might well be that Coleman's in a situation at Everton last year, wasn't he, with Sidibe, where he'd play some games and he wouldn't play others. And it might end up being that way with Ireland too, with Doherty.
David, I know you wrote about this the other day as well in the Examiner about the way Doherty is placed in the team. I'm just kind of thinking to myself, is there any chance Stephen Kenny will ever not play a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1? Will he ever play a 3-5-2?
They might have lost him there. I don't know. He appears to be frozen, but I'm not so sure about that. Yeah, I think there's obviously a lot of debate and pressure and discussion around it now, because he does have personnel there that can play those roles. But I think that would require a lot, for example, he left Obafemi out of the squad because he's not planning to play with two up front anytime soon, which to me again was a pretty clear statement of what he was going to do. Like, the answers were there, if you sort of listened and studied that. So I think he does have players that would be suited to it, but again, like, he's always been big on attacking wingers, on having like real strong attacking wingers. And if you change to that system, then you're looking for your wing backs to provide the width to some degree. Although, of course, if you have someone like Connolly, you can switch out. There is certainly there's compelling reasons to think about it, but I think he would need more time to do it.
When do you get that time? If the midfield, say, for example, because I think that's a big part of how Stephen wants to play, playing through these kind of midfields, through the lines, getting your midfields on the ball. I think if our midfield players start to demand that ball, going back to the point I made earlier, then all of a sudden, I don't think these questions would be asked as much. And I know, listen, we're talking about one game here, and he's had a couple of days, and we haven't seen any football, international football, in months. So we need to remember the situation we're in, as well as obviously with it being Stephen Kenny's first game. There's also the fact that we haven't had any international
football.
We've been starved,
Stephen,
exactly,
for months.
So we have to bear all this in mind, and all of us are getting, maybe myself included sometimes, because you're there, you want to analyse and people are asking you questions. But at the same time, I still think if we can get our midfield three, if that's the way he wants to go, dictate the game, playing that way properly, then all of a sudden everything kind of goes into place and these questions will be less asked. And it's like anything, if the team is playing well, then less questions are asked because it all kind of runs smoothly. But until we get to that situation where we're flying, we're coming up, we're watching games going, this is great, we're passing the ball, creating chances, until we get to that stage, these questions are always going to be kind of lingering in the background. And as I said, I'm looking forward to the game against Finland to see, Will he make a few changes, or will he stick with the lads and give them another chance to go and practice again a little bit more, what he's been obviously working on with them over in the brief time he's had with them?
Yeah, there's a text in here I absolutely love. Captaincy is overrated. Leadership on the pitch is found in the strength of a team's midfield, and the midfield only. From Giles and Bremner to Keane and Scholes to Xavi and Iniesta, it's where the game is decided. I thought that was pretty cool, that text that just came in there.
It is a good point, though, in terms of leadership on the pitch, because we talk about Coleman, but over the last few games, Coleman hasn't been very good for Ireland. Obviously, there was the sending off, but is leadership just shouting and giving directions to lads about you, or is it by actually being confident and looking in control and actually being able to set a tempo and do what the manager is asking? And like that, more so, not that, like, these are international footballers, they shouldn't need people holding their hands through games. I know there'll be tough moments in games where you need someone around you just to kind of get you going and to actually kind of maybe help you get through things, but there's also has to be a kind of a realism here that, like, they're top international players. So if the basics are a struggle for them, well, then you have to find alternatives, and that's just the cutthroat nature of it. I'm sure like Stephen will understand that from that sense, whereby like if lads kind of maybe do a couple of bad things on the pitch and then their heads go, maybe yeah, you need someone around you. But then if they can't get themselves keep going and actually have that the courage about them, well then maybe you have to look at different options. And just on Robbie Brady, I don't know if it's a bit of a wild card one, but if we're talking about fellas who have ability and who are capable, is he someone who could actually replace James McCarthy? Like, does he have those defensive instincts?
Yeah, we need someone to actually but we can definitely speak about that after the break. David, sorry to interrupt you there. Dan McDonald, David Snaid and Stephen Elliott on the Republic of Ireland. Any thoughts on that, folks? 5-3-1-6, getting some good comments on that. Donny van de Beek to Manchester United, Kai Havertz to Chelsea and Lionel Messi staying at Barcelona. What do you think of all that? 5-3-1-6, back after the news. Don't go away. Thank you. Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott and the journalists Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent and David Snaid. We've got a full time in from Tallaght Stadium. Bohemians have lost. Shamrock Rovers have beaten them at home. So reporting from there, Stephen Doyle.
Shamrock Rovers 1, Bohemians 0, the full-time score at Tallaght Stadium, and a third consecutive 1-0 league win for the Hoops in the Dublin Derby. A first league goal also for Danny Lafferty. It came in the fourth minute after the visitors failed to deal with a cross from Graham Burke. Goalkeeper Steve McGuinness failed to hold on to the ball. It wasn't cleared and Lafferty was there to poke it home from close range. While both sides had a few decent chances in a tense, entertaining affair, neither keeper had many saves to make. Bohemians had a good shout for a penalty in the 62nd minute when Rovers defender Liam Scales, who was excellent today, barged over Danny Grant in the box. The referee thought about it but then said no. Rovers had to dig deep for the last 10 minutes as Bohemians piled on the pressure, but the home side eventually took all 3 points. They now lead second place Bohemians by 5 points at the top of the table, and with 8 games left, take a massive step towards taking the title this season. It's finished. Shamrock Rovers 1, Bohemians 0. Stephen Doyle at Tallaght Stadium.
Thanks, Stephen. A huge win for Shamrock Rovers in the Dublin Derby. Just to let you know, Owen Farrell has been red carded today for an awful high tackle in Saracens Premiership game against Wasps. Have to see what type of ban he gets, but they're playing Leinster in the European Cup quarterfinal in 2 weeks' time. He must be a major doubt, the England's Owen Farrell. So text number 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. Our coverage of football, I brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can listen to us on News Talk, obviously. And you can also watch us on the social channels on Off the Ball, for Periscope, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app. Download that now on iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store. About the Republic of Ireland, which we've been speaking about for the last hour, because it's the only game in town really at the moment this week, until the Premier League returns. A few players were a bit rusty, just needs a bit of oil and tightening up. Hi guys, although it was a poor game, very excited by the possession and passing. Is it possible to find out the last time we had 612 passes in a game, especially away from home? Come on, you boys in green. I'd prefer a back five of Coleman, Duffy, Egan, Doherty and Stevens. Midfielders should be able to defend and pick a pass. McCarthy hasn't shown much vision. Harahan does not seem capable of defending. Hendrick is hit and miss for a while. That is from Simon. James McCarthy played the pivotal role at Wigan superbly under Martinez. So much so, Martinez took him to Everton. If he get back to that level, he'd be our best player. That is from Adam in Wicklow. And will teams, lads, a lot better than Bulgaria, allow us to have 60% possession? Will the Irish players panic on the ball if closed down quicker? That is from Jimmy in Dublin. What do we think?
Yeah, I think, well, it's obvious, isn't it? But like, better teams and better players are going to cause you more problems than teams like Bulgaria. Maybe teams could look at it if, obviously, it's hypothetical in terms of who you're going to be playing against, but let's say Slovakia next month, you're imagine that they're going to be not going to be giving you as much time on the ball. They're going to maybe press you a bit higher, or will they actually say, well, actually let Ireland have the ball, they're not going to be able to hurt us? Because that is one thing, just from being out there with Stephen Kenny today, and he touched on it briefly just in the Sunday paper section. I'm not going to go into too many details, but it's pretty obvious he wanted to see more incisive passing from his players, and that is going to be key. Like, maybe teams will be happy to let Ireland have the ball if they know, well, actually they haven't got someone there who can hurt you in behind with a pass or with a bit of movement. So yeah, it's a fair point. Like, kind of, will teams just kind of say, yeah, have the ball, and then we'll press and we'll hurt you at certain points when we know you're weak. So, but again, that's going to be something that we're going to actually have a look at over the next while, because it's not as if the way, as I said this earlier, it's not as if the way we were playing before was causing teams problems either.
I'm just kind of thinking myself, if we meet technically superior teams, the one thing I kind of took out of the other night was midfield. Was the thing in my head. I'm not sure about the midfield. That was a huge win for Rovers today, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, no, like that is significant. I mean, it's just weird. Like, it's just weird to have such a, you know, obviously we're all in the international zone, you know, and it's just weird to have a sort of a potentially season defining game taking place sort of at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. It's a bit strange, you know. And I think the game suffered as well, because I only saw the second half here while we're chatting. Like, it really has suffered without, like, the fans being there and the atmosphere and all of that. It's surreal. It's almost, it feels like a bit of an afterthought when it shouldn't be. Like, it should be a bigger game and occasion, but this is the year that we're in it. But it's very possible that we look back at this is the day that Rovers have won the league. You know, it's a short league.
There's 5 8 games to go. Big gap now, isn't it?
Yeah, 5 points with 8 games. I don't think they've been playing that well since the restart, and yet they're 5 points clear. They got an early goal today, but, like, you know, they're not necessarily, I don't think, at their best. There was 2 big penalty sheds from Bowes, which I think they're going to be pretty fuming about. But it's just unusual, you know. It's like you are looking at Jack Byrne and people who I don't think he's been at his best. I don't think Rovers have been at their best necessarily, but they're probably going to win the league. But, like, it's, I don't know, like, it's funny, like, sleeves, because you've Hibs Hearts and all these great derbies, you know, you've been involved in the Tyne Wear derby and all of this. Like, I just think they are the games where you really miss it more than anything. I felt, even just watching that game there, it just missed that sort of aggression and that energy that you really feed off the crowd, that it's a very, very diminished spectacle.
It's a totally different game, I think, we're watching now. And all aspects of football with no supporters there. If you ask any professional footballer, young kids when they're growing up, they want to be professional footballers, to go out and play in these big stadiums in front of the crowds, to kind of express themselves and enjoy that adrenaline and the buzz. And that's been taken away from the players at the moment. So it's up to the players to create that themselves. And like yourself, Dan, I was watching the game, and I don't know, it didn't seem like you're watching that, because we've all seen the Dublin derbies since forever, when they've been kind of really kind of atmospheric events. And obviously like Bowes Rovers, what was it, 2 points between them before the start of the game. Could you imagine the crowds if this was on a Friday night in Talla? Like, the place would be absolutely bouncing, and it's a shame, really. But like you say, there's going to be plenty of incidents that we're going to look at certain events in sport and go, do you know what, could you imagine if this COVID wasn't around, the atmosphere would be there. But no, I don't know. I just think certain players may enjoy this a little bit more, because some players kind of freeze sometimes in front of the big crowds and the big atmospheres, whereas other players embrace it. The likes of Jack Byrne there, you're saying he hasn't really been bang arse since after the break. But I think he's the type of player that he's a big game player, a big atmosphere player, which is partly why when he's probably gone down the divisions in England, it hasn't gone so well for him, because everybody kind of had this big kind of built him up to be this big kind of superstar in the making when he came into the international fold really young. And we all remember his press conference when he was kind of chirpy and bordering on arrogance a little bit as well. But I just think some of the moves he's made before he went back to Rovers weren't the perfect kind of timing for him. Like, we all know, I look at Jack Byrne playing, I just think if he was playing, say, in the Championship, for example, or I don't know, he's going to be playing for Ireland every single game, I think, because he'd be able to. He's the type of player that probably brings a little bit something different that no other player in the Ireland squad has. But ultimately, until Jack, it's like you go back to even going back a little before then, today's shows, when John Giles talks about players having an ability, loads of players can have ability, but it's managing that ability and showcasing that ability when it really matters in front of the big crowd and the big games, and it's finding that right moment. And that's something that, for me, I know Jack has done really well at Rovers and all, but still, for me, for him to be regularly taught about in the international fold, he has to kind of get back across and playing the UK in a better standard of football to be considered internationally. And again, that's just my opinion, but I just think if he was doing what he's capable of doing in this big atmosphere, like if he went to, say, a big club where it's 20,000 there every week and he's playing well, I think he'd rise again and go to another level, and then we'd see the best of him in the international fold. But while he's kind of at Rovers, I think he's in a bit of a comfort zone. He's back home and there's no major pressure, and I don't know, I just would love somebody to take a punt on him over in the UK or anywhere and just kind of take him to that next level, because I think for him to be taught about, and it'd be a shame if he doesn't get there, because I just think it'd be a waste if we never see him go and do it, doing the business in an Ireland top because of the ability that he has. It's a bit like Wes. Like when Wes, we all knew Wes was a great player playing the League of Ireland. Then he moved away, went obviously to Livingston, then Blackpool, and then he just sort of clicked with him at Norwich. I think he sort of clicked in his own mind, and then we were able to see the best of him in an Ireland jersey, albeit at a much later time than what I should have really been. We should have had a lot more years of Wes Hoolan playing at his best, and I just fear that we might see the same thing happen with Jack.
Can Jack get there?
I think what's interesting, sorry John to cut across you, I mean, I think Jack is one that, like, he raises his game a bit for occasions, and like even playing, I think actually Jack playing against AC Milan is going to be fascinating in a couple of weeks' time, you know, because I actually think, like, AC Milan are going to be in pre-season or just coming out of pre-season. And Rovers, of course, listen, they're massive, massive underdogs. But the Irish team does like to keep the ball. And funny, I actually get the type of game that Jack could do really well in. And it might just, like, I think all our players, all our big players, we're talking about Wes against Deportivo and Keith Fahey got him, you know, his big second break off the back of a European game. It's almost these European games that are the breakout chance to convince people. I mean, Jack will have had opportunities to go back, but I don't think they've necessarily been at the level that he needs to go, which I think he's also one as well that I do think he needs a team and a manager that really believe in him, and it's built. And I think occasionally some of his moves as well, there's been bad moves. He's also gone to clubs that, like, sort of play 4-4-2, and, you know, it's not like Jack probably needs a certain degree of trust to really, like, shine and get to the top. And
but you're right. If they see him playing and, like, affecting a big European game, maybe a chief scout or a manager over there or a bigger club, as you go, not this is the guy for us. He could do it on the big stage, and it kind of just pushes them into making that decision. And like you mentioned there, I'm sure there's been loads of clubs being touted around Jack, saying he could go there, he could go there. The last thing Jack needs to do is just go over to the first club that offers him a contract in
Correct.
The UK,
yeah.
And for him to come back. He needs it to be right. He needs to go have a chat with them. He needs to kind of analyse the manager who's interested in signing him, analyses the way he plays, study him, study what his history is, and find out whether it's the right match, because the next move for him is going to be a gigantic move in where his career goes from here, I think.
And the one thing I would say as well, John, sorry, like, that it's, you know, sometimes there's a debate about including League of Ireland players. Sometimes I think it just needs to just concentrate on the player. But obviously, of course, the level comes into it, you know, and it depends what other options you have. Like, a couple of years back, there's no doubt that Shawnee Maguire should have been called in while he was in the league, and that you need, like, the manager who's there to see that he is better than some of the options that were there in the squad at the time. But I think what's interesting, and I think a year ago, as well, I mean, Jack operated at a really high level in the European games, and he was in Ireland's best 18-20 players at that time. I just don't think he's playing that way now. But I think what's probably changed things a bit is, like, it's actually these new generation of Ida, Aaron Connolly, and so on. Like, okay, Troy is going down to the Championship on loan, but these are probably looking like lads who might play a fair bit of Premier League football. And I mean, Conor Hourihan mentioned the other night that the Callum O'Dowda was the only player that played hadn't played in the Premier League, sorry. And that is in the context of what is quite a young side in parts. And we're almost getting to the stage where, like, a couple of years back, you know, just being in the Championship playing regularly probably almost gets you in a squad, one of those big, like, 30, 40-man squads. Whereas now I think the younger players being at a higher level is probably driving up the bar a bit for what you need to get into the squad. And I think that's a healthy thing for everyone. And, like, we need a young, vibrant league here that is a platform for players to aspire to get to those levels. But I think there have been times where players here have been overlooked just because where they've played, and actually the levels in the squad probably weren't that good. Whereas now I think the levels in the squad are probably going up. So it's going to be way harder for someone like Jack excelling here, I think.
5-3-1-0-6. I don't think Hendrick is good enough on the ball to play the way Kenny wants. I think McCarthy, Brady, Malumbi are our best three. Lads, what about England? Today could be the day we see Declan Rice and Jack Grealish together on international duty. That is from Paul in Cork. Rice is starting against Iceland. Grealish is on the bench. Are Ireland, this is a good one, are Ireland due a world-class footballer? Surely there's an average timescale for nations our size, from Brady to McGrath to Keane, or Wales from Rush to Giggs to Bale. Love the show, gents. That is from Dara in Clondalkin. You're probably right.
Kevin, so we'll throw another name out there as well for the hype machine, but there's a kid called Kevin Zeffy who scored for Shamrock Rovers last night against Longford Town. And it's the youngest ever goal scorer in League of Ireland history. Now, Kevin Zeffy's 15 and a couple of hundred days, or I'm not sure what the specific age is. But again, he's now there's a debate over whether he can actually go away to the UK when he's 16 or 18. I think there's a bit of a debate around that. I think Stephen Carr is involved in representing him. There's been Inter Milan interest in Kevin Zeffy, and he is probably the Troy Parrott of his generation, that age group a couple of years down. So I'm just mentioning that name out there. Don't think it's fair to put pressure on them, but he
You've
is
done
the
it
one,
anyway.
But I've done it now, and he's the one in that age group. But, like, again, it's European clubs looking at him. And like he's going to go somewhere to a very good club, and yeah, we are probably due one. Like, I mean, and who's to say that some of that it isn't necessarily Troy or Aaron Connolly or someone that gets to a level, Adam Ida, you know, who knows where they'll go. But I know what you're saying. It's that sort of like iconic player, that iconic figure.
Bale wasn't one of those at the start.
There's your point, isn't it? Yeah. You know, that like at 20, he wasn't that, you know. So if we've got lads now playing at a really good level at 18, 19,
think about it, like the prospect of the fact that you have like Troy Parrott now going on loan to Millwall, but in and around at Spurs, he's being sent there obviously with a view to seeing, not make or break from, but let's see how he goes coming back to Spurs. Adam Ida, who's already been around, played in the Premier League as a teenager. Aaron Connolly scored a couple of goals and being in the team at Brighton. Like, to be having a batch of these players at that age to be in the Premier League, when everyone talks about, well, it's so hard for youngsters to break through, it does bode well, and it's just about managing them as they get a little bit older. And not the downside, but the fact is as well, you've got a little bit of a lack of control, because it's all about how they do for their club and what happens in their club form and moves they might make. Steven said earlier about Jack Bourne and his next move, like Aaron Connolly doing well, hopefully getting in at Brighton and playing regularly. Adam Eady, we'd hope now will get in and play regularly in the Championship. Well, there's no guaranteeing that. They signed a lad, Jordan Ugel, and obviously they have Pukki too. So it's these lads have given themselves a platform, and now they have to just try and kick on. What they've done gives them a pressure, but it's a good pressure because at least their name is out there a little bit. They've given themselves that kind of little set the platform, and now they have to just go on and kick on. It's not going to be easy for them, but it's clear.
I think though, kind of, we're talking about kind of big stars. For me, like, again, Dan has mentioned not piping up players, but for me, every time I've watched Troy Parrott, for me, there's something a little bit different about him. It's his body language, it's his mindset. He looks to me as if he has the mindset of somebody that is going right to the top and nobody's gonna get in his way. And if he continues to develop, he's gone off on loan now. And I think it's a good move for him as well. He's still in London. He probably won't have to kind of commute as far, like wherever he's staying. He's still in the same area. And I think he'll do really well this year at Millwall, which is a good club. It's a really good club for him to be at the moment. I just think Troy Parrott could be our next, I don't want to say our next big hope, but I really like the way he plays, his knowledge of the game, the way he moves. It's so much more advanced for somebody of such a young age. And I remember even watching him a few years back when he was a young lad down Fairview Park. Not Fairview Park, down Clontarf from the Astros, next to Fairview Park, and it would have been under 14s. And I remember looking and thinking, well, I remember thinking to myself, this guy could play man's football now at that such a young age. Not because of his physicality, it was just his mental kind of movements on the pitch and the way he kind of drifted into little positions and the way he controlled the ball. And for me, to watch his development over the last few years hasn't been a major surprise, but I really think there's something special about him.
You're a striker, Stephen. Does he have any weaknesses?
I haven't seen. You wouldn't look at him and go, he's bad at that, he's bad at that. Is he lightning quick? I'm not too sure, but he's no slouch. I don't know, I just watch him. Technically, he's good on both sides. He can certainly finish. He's going to be a decent size. I don't know, I just think it's his mindset as well, the way he is and the way he carries himself on the pitch. He never looks overawed or like no kind of... It's like even when he made his international debut, he was only a nipper, and he just walked out onto the pitch as if, yeah, this is where I'm meant to be. And I don't know, I really believe he's going to be a really big star.
The interesting one about him, John, is that, like, I would have watched a reasonable amount of Parrott playing in the Irish underage teams, and particularly that under seven, like, he was always promoted out of his age group, and that even, like, he's a year younger than Adam Ida. But that English team, that Irish team that was beaten on the penalty shootout over in England, in that sort of famous penalty shootout where the Jimmy Corcoran was sent off in the middle of it, the goalkeeper, it was a scandal. But even then, like, you had Adam Ida as like the number nine, like leading the line, and it was Troy as a number 10 sort of in behind. And then with the 21s, even on occasion, he's played off the left. He's played off the, maybe more so off the left than necessarily off the right. And that, I sort of did a piece about this during the week, that like, I think when, certainly in the short term with Stephen Kenny, like, he's more looking at Adam Ida as his sort of number nine, his like central striker. And I think with Troy, it's a case of where, how his football personality develops. I think at Spurs, like, they were almost like tutoring him in the style of like that Harry Kane central sort of striker who comes back to midfield and gets on the ball, and then players break in behind him, the two wide players. And it's not a concern. I think it's actually great to have that versatility. But I think part of his Irish journey, early days, is going to be actually figuring out where he plays. Like, he didn't actually make the squad until David McGoldrick was an injury doubt. And then he had to pull out himself with his injury. But I think the only thing about Troy is that he has such a range of attributes, and he can, and it's a great like versatility that he has. But like, is there a danger that he ends up almost positionless with Ireland to some degree? Like, I mean, they'll always find a room for quality, but the question mark is, does Stephen Kenny in the short term see him as like someone who leads the line, or is he going to end up in a, just in a bit of a halfway house a bit? I think that's going to be one to watch. But I mean, he's so unbelievably like young and hasn't played a season of men's football yet, that I'm sure his style
exactly.
will naturally
I don't think,
evolve
I,
anyway.
I don't think he's going to be have a major impact in Stephen Kenny's squad or team in the next couple of years. I think we'll see him in and around the squad. We may see him back in the 21s at times, I'm not sure. But for me, I'm talking of, like, the discussion was about who's going to be our next star, and I genuinely think that he has the attributes to kind of go to that level, and it's all about himself now. I think if he obviously needs a little bit of luck along the way, but he's at a fantastic club in Spurs, and they're moving in the right direction. He's got Harry Kane there, kind of one of the best strikers in the world, learning from him on a daily basis over the last couple of years. I know he'd be at Millwall this year, but I just think if he continues to kind of learn from these guys, he's in and around, and I don't know, I think the future's really bright. And for me, I know we talked about Adam Ida and Aaron Connolly, who for me was best player on the pitch the other night for Ireland. Connolly, I thought he was a real liver, but I still think Troy Parra can go to the next level, even above them pair.
Yeah, and Harry Kane obviously went to a load of clubs on loan. David, just bring you in there before we go to the break about Messi. Obviously, if we found out yesterday that he's staying at Barcelona. The legal process, I think, is a big part of it. Maybe the lifestyle as well of moving, COVID, a language. But like, this was the quote, there is no project, nothing, just throwing things in the air, filling holes as they go along. I want to compete, not what has been happening all these years. Roma, Liverpool, Munich. His relationship with Bartomeu, the president, has completely broken down. Bartomeu is leaving in March. But to me, this was a complete anticlimax. I would have loved to have seen Messi go to City. I don't think it's completely dead in the water, but it looks like it is. But should Barcelona have not just let him leave and done a deal with some kind of club on some kind of compromise fee? He owes them absolutely nothing after 20 years now. Like, life and business is much more cutthroat than what I've just said, but it is a very sad situation for me.
It's sad. Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't really find it sad. I just find it a little bit, I just find it all very stupid. Like, I just can't believe Messi thought he was actually going to be able to get out, because like, it's there in black and white that he had to kind of say he was gone before, was it June 10th? And like, I watched that interview, because it's weird actually, because even though he's the main superstar of football for the last while, I actually can't remember ever hearing him speak. So it's actually just intriguing. But what he was saying, I just thought, like, I know this sounds really, this is probably derogatory, I just thought he was so like stupid in what he thought he was. Like, I just found it like bizarre that he thought, he was talking about, oh, Barcelona are the club of my life and all this, and I didn't want to bring it to court, but yeah, he'd been telling them for a year that he wanted to go.
What he said, obviously,
but just in how he was trying to go about it, but even like the legalities of it, like, surely if he was dead set on doing this, he would have made sure that he got his request in when he needed to. Like, was he expecting Barcelona to say, yeah, go on, actually, do you know what, we'll take it, we'll take only 100 million for you and whatever. Like, as I say, Barca are in disarray, like, and they'll lose him on a free, but they'll have him for a year. They're probably hoping that he's not going to want to taint his legacy by kind of sitting on his bum for a year and not pulling in, which I can't see him do. So it is sad in the sense of like of how it's going to end with him there at Barcelona. But I just think in terms of how he's being advised and not through all this and how he's even acted himself, I think it's kind of taken a bit of a gloss off. I think it will. I think it's going to take a bit of a gloss off his career at Barca and just how people maybe view him. I know it has with me anyway.
He carries the weight of the world on his shoulders, Messi, like when things aren't going well. That's the way I kind of see it with him.
You have to remember from Messi's point of view, though, he's carried this Barcelona team on his back for God knows how long. And sometimes maybe it just got a bit too much for him. And he's only human at the end of the day. I know. Dave's mentioned there that he thought he was stupid. I think that's a little bit disrespectful. I don't think he's stupid. I think he's let his football do the talk, and if anything, when you're that good, you don't really need to kind of speak or do loads of interviews, because he's so good. And I think we need to kind of, I think something will happen though during the season where they'll come to some sort of kind of conclusion on it, and he'll probably end up staying at Barca for the rest of his days. Now, if he didn't go this summer, I can't see him ever leaving now. I think they'll come to some sort of agreement and he'll continue to ply his trade at Barcelona for as long as he plays. And then maybe be involved with the club thereafter as well. I just can't picture him. Even when it felt like it was happening, I'm thinking to myself, is he actually really, are we going to actually see him? We spoke with this a couple of weeks ago. Are we actually going to see him in a different strip than the Barcelona strip? But I don't know whether I could have bear to look at that. I'm actually glad he's staying, to be honest, from a personal point of view. I just think you associate the guy with the club, and I don't think it'll affect his status at the club as well long term. I think when he finally stops playing, whether he does leave Barcelona at the end of the season or whether he continues to stay there, I think you can't help but look at the bigger picture and see what he's done for that football club and football in general. I think he's an absolute superstar. I think we're all very lucky to be able to enjoy watching him over the past 15 years.
Okay, got to take a break. Congratulations to Richard Bridges. You knew that Pebble Beach was the correct answer to our question. We asked listeners the course where Graham McDowell won the US Open 10 years ago, back in 2010, of course. It was Pebble Beach. And you, Richard, and a guest have won a luxurious overnight golf break at the Heritage. For more information on the fantastic golf breaks available at the Heritage or to book, visit theheritage.com. More on football, Man United and Chelsea signings on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. 53106 your text. Back after this. And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent, and the journalist David Snay as well. Speaking about the beautiful game as always, hope you're well this afternoon. Just to tell you that while you can listen on News Talk and you can text us on 53106, you can also watch us on our social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube, Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app. So make sure you download that if you haven't already. Stephen, Donny van de Beek from Man United this week. To me, that sounds like a squad enhancement. Obviously, he's going to be playing a lot of first-team football, but they've got a Champions League campaign. He's 23 years of age. It's a five-year deal. He was meant to be going to Real Madrid, but that fell through. An attacking midfielder, not too dissimilar to Fernandez, but he can play a bit deeper as well. Do you think that's a good addition?
He's a quality player, but I found it a little bit strange that Man United had signed him, to be honest. Because if you're looking at Man United, of all the areas, you'd probably say they're quite strong in midfield, obviously with Pogba there. Fernandez, Matip signed a new contract. So you're thinking, is Van de Beek going to play? I know he signed a long-term deal, so they may be looking at him, like you mentioned, with all the games next season, bit of a squad player and maybe one for the future. But I don't know. I think United, look, I think they're in the kind of situation now where they have to try and kind of compete with Liverpool and Man City. So if there's players available and they feel like you can get them, they probably think, we can't miss out on these players rather than go to a rival. But no, I found it a little bit strange that they were in the market for another kind of midfield player, especially after how well Fernandez has come in and done. And you just wonder, is he going to play regularly in the fourth season or so there? But again, you don't know. I'm sure Ollie has a plan for him.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if that axis of Maguire, Lindelof and the defensive midfielder, Matic or whoever it may be, is good enough for United.
No, yeah, I think that's an area I think Man United could look to strengthen. They've looked suspect at times at the back. I know Harry Maguire in general has done all right. Lindelof, again, he's done okay in games. But you look at Man United of old, they've always had that real kind of leadership in there. You go back to Ferdinand, Vidic, when they played, they were really strong. Even before hit their time, you had Jaap Stam there, like big leader. I don't see that at Man United at the moment. So maybe that's an area that if they kind of had a strength, that wouldn't have been as big a surprise to me as the midfield area.
It was funny, Stephen, Alexis Sanchez coming out that he wanted to go back to Arsenal after one training session at United. Did you ever feel like that at a new club, or did you ever see other players like that on the first day?
No, I'm not to that extreme. Like, again, obviously Sanchez has come out and said his piece this week, which I don't know what, it was a bit strange for me actually coming out and saying I don't know what he was looking to achieve, but he's had his say and it's made a few headlines. But the only thing for myself, maybe when I left Sunderland and went to Wolves, I went out to Wolves because I was enjoying my time at Sunderland, and obviously my wife and all us from Sunderland, the kids were there. But probably when I heard the accent in around the Wolverhampton area, then I thought, geez, do I really want to be living in this area? Because I didn't really particularly like the accent, but it was nothing to do with the football.
Luke Kelly used to live in Wolverhampton.
And they've got great like music as well. So like, you know, Slade came out of there and everything, and great bands.
Yeah.
Couldn't go back.
No, it's one of them. Like, now, listen, if a player, sometimes you go to certain clubs as a footballer and you settle better at other clubs. And obviously, Sanchez, obviously being one of the biggest profiles in the game, went to Man United, and there was everybody's eyes were on them because he was the big sign, and he was the go-to guy for United that was going to turn him around, and didn't just quite work for him. And there was a lot of questions asked. Was he unhappy? There was a few rumours coming out around the club at the time saying he was, I don't know. Again, it's just one of them things. He's moved on now to Inter Milan. It seems to go on a little bit better for him now. He's decided to have his stay. Maybe he just felt like he needed to get it off his chest rather than just let it kind of drift away without having something to say. But I don't know. Maybe. Was it in English, the interview? I didn't even see the interview. Maybe
I just saw the headline. Oh, we needed the headlines. Yeah. Oh, we just take the
headlines.
You don't
know. Sometimes these interviews can kind of get lost in translation little bit as well. Maybe with the messy thing as well, possibly as well, regarding some of the stuff he says. So you don't really know. Again, it's just one of them. If you settle at a club, you do well, then you enjoy it. If you don't, then the negative seemed all that bigger. That's what I would probably say.
53106. I can't believe the criticism Messi's receiving. He's done more for football than any other player this century. That is from Owen. I think the lesson that
I've actually just started writing lines here. I must respect Messi. genuinely, when I said it was he was being stupid, obviously.
Don't backtrack.
Obviously, the man is a genius, but he was being stupid in how he tried to force his way out when he had missed the deadline. That's why he was being stupid. He should have been advised. So that's why I was saying that about Messi. But just
You got a hot phone, David Snyder. I can see all those texts coming in there.
Can I say one thing before Dave goes on to Van der Beek? The one thing about Messi, I do think, like, for all that you say, it might have taken the gloss off his time. Like, people forget that, like, Steven Gerrard and John Terry, like, both tried to leave their club at various times, however way you spin it. Like, they were definitely open to doing it, and yet they're gonna, you know, heroes, legends, icons, and all this type of stuff. Like, and to be honest, like, Messi, like, all he needs to do is, like, stick in a free kick in the first game of the season to the top corner, and sure, we'll all forgive him. We'll just be like, ah, there we go again, you know. It'll be literally forgotten about. He'll be declared the most loyal club man of all time, like, even if he tried to leave, you know. That's how it works.
He's probably still going to score about 40 goals next season anyway, and I think the player maybe will sometimes win on that. But just on United, and we mentioned obviously Van de Beek and Sanchez, like, the Sanchez thing, because I think it was his own Instagram. Like, the thing with that, why it's so strange, is the fact that, like, he was kind of agitating for a move away from Arsenal back then, and Guardiola wanted to sign him at City, and the reason why he ended up at United was purely down to money. Like, there was that embarrassing, like, signing reveal where he's playing the piano and all sorts, and it just seemed like he went there purely for the money when he had, at that point, it seems strange to say it, when you have the choice between United and City, and the way it went with City coming in, you would have thought players go to City for money, but at that point, like, if he was really serious about wanting to go and win stuff, he would have went to City at that point. It's just seemed baffling. And, like, you read stuff about his time at United, and there's been articles written about it. Like, one thing that, like, I'd say a lot of United fans after his first month would have been wanting him to go back as well. Like, he's talking about the first training session. Like, he's probably the biggest waste of money of that. He's kind of symbolises what has been wrong with Man United.
Also, smash the wage structure too.
Yeah. Yeah, but just, he kind of is that symbol, and, like, his attitude, like, there's a great story in the sense of just how ridiculous it is, where he asked for a fridge in the dressing room. He asked for the door to open a different way, because when the door opened, it made him feel cold in the dressing room. And you're sort of thinking, like, what is this fella on? But now you've got a situation where United are bringing in, are totally getting away from that culture of the Sanchezes of this world, where they're trying to bring in lads. And we mentioned there, no, Stephen was saying about Van de Beek and where will he fit in, but or what way are you getting him? But like, he's a young player who's got his best years ahead, and he's quality. Like, United's problem over the last while has been a lack of quality everywhere on the pitch. Maybe at the moment, maybe not so much at the top end of the pitch, but they still obviously want to bring in Sancho. So United bringing in someone like Van de Beek, it's just going to add more quality and hopefully bring out more in the players that are around them. You're going to have obviously Matic. Like Matic, fairness, like Matic has some amazing revitalization this season. People thought he was gone. Like, you looked at him thinking like he's not the same player. He's got his new contract, but you still have to look beyond him. He might have a tough year, or maybe next season he might not be able to reach those levels. And from what United need to do in terms of having a depth of quality around the pitch, they still need definitely centre half, probably even obviously an attacker, maybe even two centre halves if they decide to get rid of the likes of Smalling and Jones, and maybe even Bay, who's injury prone. But you can kind of now see that, kind of beginning to see that sense now with Solskjaer, for all the criticism maybe he does get, maybe not one of the superstar coaches of the world game, but he's beginning to actually put a structure in place and actually begin to build and just get back to what United was maybe before, where maybe they weren't always going after the superstars, but they were going for the likes of Van Beek, who has still maybe got more to give and has already shown his calibre in terms of what he did with Ajax.
Well, also, when they won that European Cup, the four strikers they had weren't necessarily the best strikers in the world. Cole, York, Sheringham and Solskjaer, yeah. They were still, as a sum of their parts, they were brilliant. Just on Kai Havertz to Chelsea, they're spending money, Stephen, like it's 2005, over €200 million on transfers, €85 million for this guy from Germany, 21 years of age, versatile, tall, good passer, movement is good. Seems like a very promising prospect. And Frank Lampard, although once again, a bit like United, like I'm thinking of the defence, I'm thinking of the keeper. Is this a player that they need?
Yeah, well, Chelsea having a right go in the transfer market. You mentioned Roman Abramovich there. Like, they've got a never-ending kind of money trail, so money's never an object for them. They obviously can kind of manoeuvre it to kind of suit the fair play, but again, Chelsea sign all these players. All these clubs are, I think, they're in the market to get these players because they're looking at the likes of Liverpool, Man City, and they're thinking, do you know what, we need to try and kind of get closer to them. And they're probably having the mind thinking, no, if we get these players forced, then we may develop them, because they'd be taken down the line. Maybe City will get them, maybe Liverpool will get them, maybe Manchester United will get them. So it's kind of a bit of a rat race at the moment to get these kind of promising players in and around Europe. But again, you're talking about the Premier League starting next week, I still think Liverpool are the team to catch. Like, they've got so much quality and I don't know, fluidity when they attack and when they're in that kind of final tour, that it's going to be a big ask for any club. I know City have signed a few players and you've got the Pep Guardiola effect there. Can they kind of catch them? But again, for me, I think I'll be very surprised if Liverpool don't win the league next year. And obviously, Man City won't be too far. It might be a little bit closer than last year, but I think Man City will finish second. And then, again, you look at the likes of Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, have Spurs got enough with Mourinho. I think it'll be a little bit kind of chasing them Champions League places again, albeit the top two.
Yeah, I think that's a fair show, because I know there's some people look at Liverpool after what they've done over the last couple of years and just the consistency and well, can they do it? But I just think like that team, it's like the perfect team in the sense of just how it operates. And I know obviously it was like Kevin De Bruyne got, like, maybe there was a player of the year and stuff or the stuff, but I just think Mane over the last couple of years is someone who probably even more to come from. It's just actually, it's a little bit kind of terrifying and exciting to see the levels that he could still reach, because I think that's still more to come from him, you know. And he's someone who, we're talking about kind of leadership in terms of on the pitch, but I think he's someone who is a leader for Liverpool. And if he's not at the levels, that kind of front three could struggle, maybe not struggle, because obviously Salah's class and Firmino, but I think Mane is the one who of that three, I think, has even more to go.
No, they still got to do it. It's on Tuesday, the PFA Player of the Year. But I kind of know what you're saying there, David. Shane Duffy to Celtic, Dan, do you think it's a good move for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably is. I mean, like, again, it probably comes back, it overlaps to the Irish debate to some degree, that, you know, it's if you have a manager who plays in a particular style, it's going to challenge you. And it's been clear from Brighton last year, and I would have been over there last year, I think David would have been as well, sort of early stages of the season, that what Graham Potter is looking to do was different. He's playing with that back three, and he wants them. You know, he just wants certain attributes from them, and he obviously had options. You know, he possibly, you know, if he was cash orientated, I could have assumed he probably could have gone the Premier League route if he'd really wanted to. I'm not sure how they've structured the loan deal. Obviously, loan deals can be structured in different ways. But he is an authentic Celtic fan. You know, I think you need to probably understand Derry to know, again, what Celtic means to a lot of those lads. He would genuinely have grown up being a Celtic fan. He's had a tough time with his dad passing away not long ago. He spoke about it the other day. And I'd say, you know, the emotional, there's a lot of emotional angles. There's a football angle. There's the 10 in a row angle. And there's probably the fact that, like, I think, you know, he's obviously a bit disappointing that they've been knocked out of the Champions League. Still a chance of Europa League football. But I think, you know, there's every chance that, like, they'll call on him to utilise his best attributes. You know, that they want that sort of commanding centre-half from listening to people who really follow Celtic closely. They feel that they need that sort of commanding presence there. So as a result, it's a perfect fit for him. I mean, there's obviously a degree of pressure with it. I'm sure he'll be, again, desperate to get fans back in to really get the full experience. But, yeah, I think rather than just sort of going to West Ham or someone for the sake of it and making a sideways move, I can understand the appeal because it's a very genuine and personal one for him.
Yeah. I think it's a huge move for both parties. I think for Celtic as well, to get somebody of the calibre of Shane Duffy, who's done so well internationally and in the Premier League over the last few years, to get signing like him in a season where Rangers have improved, and I think it will be a little bit closer up in the SPL this year. But to sign somebody of Shane Duffy's experience and quality, and like Dan mentioned there, he's an avid Celtic supporter, probably grew up with every single Celtic short on his back as he was growing up. And I don't know, I think it's a big signing on the football park, first and foremost, for Celtic, because he's a top defender, Shane. Obviously, people question his kind of technical attributes, passing out from the back, which is obviously partly why he didn't really get much game time at Brighton. But defensively, I don't think there's much better about, and it'd be a huge threat as well for Celtic going forward, because they've got some players that could put some really good delivery into the box. And I think other clubs in the SPL, especially Rangers across the city, would be thinking, do you know what, we're in for a bit of trouble here. And I think Celtic were going to win the league anyway, but I think signing somebody of Shane's quality will just emphasise that they're desperate to kind of get this 10 in a row.
Yeah, we've got about 3 minutes left, guys. Everton doing a bit of business today as well. Alan signing from Napoli on a three-year deal, around just over €20 million. They seem to have an unlimited pot of money at Everton. It's amazing that James Rodriguez is going to end up at Everton. Like, you know, at one stage, this guy had like just everything at his feet. World Cup Golden Boot winner. What do you think?
You're waiting for Everton to sort of, you're waiting for them to become more relevant, I guess. Yeah. You know, it feels like that they have the money there. God, like James, when you consider, got the pleasure of seeing him probably at his peak in the 2014 World Cup, and yeah, you probably didn't, but I mean, isn't that just more representative as well of the pulling power of the Premier League that still lingers? You know, the financial pulling power that you have, you know, a middle ranking team ultimately has the power to, you know, to go out there and do it.
But on Everton as well, though, I think you always get the impression with Everton that they're kind of always striving to break into that kind of elite kind of part of the Premier League, and they keep stumbling, so to speak. Like, obviously, when Koeman went in there, he spent the fortune, everybody's saying he could be the guy to kind of push them on. But I think in Ancelotti, they have somebody that's very astute, and he knows his business. And I'd like to see Everton do well. I think they've been a long time, kind of, the supporters have kind of suffered a lot, because they would have been a huge club back in the, before my time, even back in the 80s, when they were winning league titles and competing with Liverpool for all the major cups and leagues. And I think Everton supporters just would love to see their club back. Kind of, it may take a little bit of time. Might take when they move into the new stadium, which looks like will be going ahead before they're kind of at that stage. But I would like to see Everton back competing, because it's a great football club but really loyal fan base.
Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonald, and David Snaid, I really enjoyed this afternoon. Thanks so much, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, John. No, take care.
Cheers, lads. Okay, well, don't forget that Off the Ball Sunday tomorrow is starting at 1 o'clock and finishing at 7. 6 hours of sports content here on Off the Ball here on News Talk. I'll be keeping the chair warm for Joe Malloy. So what do we got? Well, we'll bring you live and exclusive commentary of the Republic of Ireland's Nations League match with Finland from Lansdowne Road in the company of Nathan Murphy and Stuart Byrne. So don't miss that. Cliona Foley and David Jennings will join us for the Sunday paper review. We'll also have the news round with Neil Tracy. We'll speak rugby with James Downey and Cian Tracy after Ulster's match against Edinburgh tonight, as well as Leinster and Munster reviewing that game last night, which Leinster won. So be sure to tune into that. Plenty to look forward to. If you missed our Saturday panel chat about the wonderful game of hurling and how it's set for an inter-county return with Eddie Brennan, Anthony Nash and Fintan O'Connor, and our football chat just now with Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonald and David Snade, you can find the podcasts of them on our brand new OTB Sports app. If you haven't downloaded that now, please do so by searching OTB Sports in your app store to check it out for iOS and Android. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.